I'm excited to have on the show today Stephen Wang, co-founder of Street Text. Now, this is a special podcast for me. I've known Steve for, I don't know, Steve, maybe 17, 18, 20 years. I always like to think it's maybe five, but I know it's been way longer. But thank you for coming on the show today.
Oh, I'm pumped to be here, Dustin. And yeah, we've done lots of camping trips together, a bunch of different adventures. It is, and families have spent a lot of time together. It is special for me to be on the podcast as well. I'm excited.
This is better for me because Steve and I have been like, I don't know if you want to call it like a yo-yo, but more like in business, one, it was kind of like our suspenders were caught in each other's doors and we were in a street race. Like one person would move ahead, then the next person would move ahead, then the next person. It almost was like back and forth. And then it doesn't necessarily mean business growth, but it'd be some of the struggles or obstacles that we were going through. It would be like, oh man, this is going on. And then the other person would give each other help. And then 6 months later, the other person was going through something different. Oh, hey, I can know it. So to get us back, to get listener up to speed a little bit, you've had a very non-traditional sort of like when you were 20, you set out to what at 20 were you going to be?
Oh, great question. I knew for sure that I never wanted to work for anybody. That was something like from day one, I just knew it. And I don't mean I didn't enjoy learning from people or working under people from a mentorship. I just didn't want a job. And that was always very clear to me. In fact, if I could have only ever had one job, it would have been, it sounds so juvenile, but it would have been James Bond, right? You get to live this extraordinary life. You're on just on cool trips all the time, saving the world, right? All sorts of fun gadgets. That would have been the only kind of, again, juvenile, but the only kind of envision I had for my life was how do I figure out how to be James Bond and not have a job? Anyways, that led me down, I would say like a passive income kind of desire. I really did want to figure out how to create income fairly early. I bought my first piece of real estate when I was 19 and I was so excited to be in debt. I remember phoning all my friends being like, man, and that was back when you could buy a house for $100,000. I remember when I was just so excited to have $100,000 worth of like mortgage debt, because I just knew that was part of, you know, building sort of the life that I wanted. So I don't know, that was, those are the early days. That's as far back as I can take it that I can think of.
And then it parlayed into your real estate career with another idea on the side, or was it during real estate that something wasn't, you had to, it, what does Tim Ferriss say, that itch to scratch? Or you
yeah.
Scratch it
and itch. Actually, there's a funny story even with you and all that too. So I was into real estate and then but I'm not yet a real estate agent. I actually wanted to be a developer. And I still think there's a future for me in that in some way, shape or form. I loved development. So I went to work for a gentleman in town and I went to work for him literally just for free. Just like Warren Buffett would say, like there was somebody I knew that was doing this commercial real estate. He was changing the facade, he'd buy it around colleges, put in a bunch of different tenants that was food related, and he would refinance and then he would just sell them at a higher cap rate. A lower cap rate, but like more rent on the cap rate. And he just made a killing and he did it time after time. And I knew what he was doing, but looking back, I wish I'd almost just known a little bit more even. It really was a smart system, but he had some health issues. But I was licensed to be working with him. And so he had like a bipolar kind of condition. And so when things were good, they were really good, but when they were bad. And so then I got into real estate after everything started falling apart with him. And I was selling residential real estate. And that's actually where I met you. So you had a couple of friends that were also real estate agents that worked in the office, Rob and Lee. And I got to meet you through them. And it was actually you first that came to me and had wanted to do a sit down, and you wanted to talk about social media and where it was going and where you saw it going. And I thought it was just at that time, I just thought it was like the silliest distracting thing in the world. And it's funny, that's where the better part of my last 15 years of my life has really been focused on. And so it was you that actually got that whole thing kickstarted, Dustin.
Well, And so listener, Steve and I are part of where we've calmed it down, but for a number of years, we had a mastermind group. And again, many people ask, where would I find a mastermind group and where do I find a mentor? They're actually closer to you than you think. And it might not be as organized as a group as someone might like. But Steve and I had two other brothers who owned a business and an accountant. And the five of us would literally meet once a month for coffee and talk about things. So that group has been, like, for many parts of big decisions, was very instrumental in getting decisions. I remember when I left my previous partnership after 8 years, it was you who I think we were in the mastermind going, and I would say that you and I were two of the most conservative guys of the group at that time. And you had said, I think you just got to go. I think you got to just run with the lions. And so I literally walked from my mastermind group that day with you guys to the space that I was considering leasing and leased it out. So again, I'll throw it right back at you to thank you for the encouragement of our careers and the power of the mastermind to make it what it is today. So you kind of alluded to it. For the last kind of, has it been 15 years? Pretext?
I guess it hasn't been that long on the, for sure, on the exactly what I do today. But I would say the journey started then, because that's even when you and I, we started a couple little projects, you know, then that turned into, it was actually an open house business. So that was back then. There wasn't the app store.
When is this? When it?
There was in 2000 and probably like 11, 2012. So we created this because I was in real estate now. I was selling residential real estate. And I remember I was working with this other girl. We did a bunch of deals together. And this was before you couldn't even get, there was no realtor.ca on your phone. It didn't even exist. None of that existed. And we would be showing property together. And what would often happen is you'd be with someone, showing them a property. You'd walk out and you would see another home down the street that was for sale. And you'd want to know how much it was. Well, or the people you were with, the buyers, would always say, how much is that home? And unless you went back to the office or phoned the agent on the sign, and hopefully they picked up, you wouldn't even know how much the home was worth. And that was only just, you know, that wasn't even all that long ago. And Lori, she said to me, wouldn't it be cool if you could text for information on the property right here and it could be sent to your phone? And that's what we did. And so we had this open house network we were trying to build of open houses for real estate agents. And when the, you know, so if you wanted to do a last minute open house, you didn't have to go to the newspaper. You could use our website to promote your open house. And that pivoted into a texting service where people, real estate agents, would have these for sale signs, and they would have a sign topper on top that would say, text this number to this number, and all the information about the property would get sent to your phone. And that was a nice to have product. We kept the name, but then we pivoted in 2014 fully to Facebook, at that time Meta today. And then that expanded to Instagram. And now this year we're expanding into Google as well. But that's where we took the clients that we were working with at that time on the texting platform. And they would say to us things like, hey, we like your service. We like how it works, but we just don't get enough leads. Could you find another way to get more leads for us? And we began testing things on the Facebook newsfeed. Back then, actually, Facebook didn't have, I don't know if you remember this, Dustin, but there used to be ads on Facebook, but they would be up in, it wouldn't be in the newsfeed. It would be up on the right-hand side, I think might even on the left, but I think on the right, and it'd be like an ad. But you would never click it and never look at it, and it was small, and the only thing you ever saw was your social feed. And that was the only thing you cared about, like updates. That was back when people would do a status update and, yeah, you know, and whatnot. And then Facebook introduced ads into the newsfeed. And that was a game changer for them, because an ad became where your eyes were, and it didn't live up in the corners anymore. It lived in the newsfeed. And I just knew we could tap into that. And there's a whole story about how we did, but I knew that if we could tap into that, we should be able to generate a lot of leads. And that's where StreetText began. Or I shouldn't say began. That's where the social, or the Facebook and Instagram part of our product began. And that's all we do today. Our platform is just built on Facebook and Instagram.
So we're going to get to that, but I'd like to go back to trying to figure out the street text thing. So this is back in the day, you're like, well, okay, even today I'm thinking, man, you're dealing with networks like Rogers and Telus, you're dealing with these big phone companies. It's like, how do you overcome that obstacle, like putting a framework together in very regulated things?
Yeah. And it was so painful. You're alluding to it for so many reasons as well, because not only did we have to figure out, make sure it was delivered on all the carriers, that was back in the day where smartphones were just beginning. Most people didn't have a smartphone. You just had a flip phone or whatever else, and you could get text information sent to your phone, but you couldn't even click a link to see photos. Or you could, some of them began to have it. And so those were early days for sure. And what was even worse than all of that was explaining to a real estate agent how the system worked on the phone, why they should buy it, and they had to order signs for their business, and we charged them $15 a month. So, you know, back then you just don't know what you don't know, but think about this. I'm gonna make $15 a month on someone to use this tool. I am investing an enormous amount of time in finding them and getting them on the phone. So you can't build a sales team around that, but we tried. Then you'd have to educate them and convince them on why they should use the tool. And then hopefully they stick around and use it. The point is there was so little money in it that we would have needed to have charged way more money to get the scale that we needed to make it work. I mean, we went to our very first trade show, John and I, we were so naive. We went to this big conference in Toronto where there was like supposed to be 20,000 people there. And we're like, oh man, we got a booth. We're going to get like 5,000 people sign up, 10,000 people sign up. And I think we got 5 or 6 people sign up. And you can't even imagine the disappointment on the way home. Like it was like, we're like kind of optimistic guys. My brother, he's like eternally optimistic. You can't get him down. He was down. Like he had worked so hard on it. And for anybody listening, these are the journeys you go through. And if you're going through a hard thing in your business right now, just keep persevering. The disappointments are real. And that was a huge disappointment for us. Again, we probably spent on that event, right? I don't know what you spent. You got your flights, your hotels and the conference, and we had a booth and everything else. And we made $250.
Right? Yeah.
And you come home and then you just got to keep going, keep working at it. So that business actually did grow. We got it bigger, but it was never going to be able to support the team. I think we got that business up to like maybe $9,000 or $10,000 a month. And that was a tough slog, right, to get it there. And there was churn and people left. And we were delivering a physical product, which was these sign toppers. And all those struggles were real. So it was pretty hard, for sure.
What would you say about now when you look at projects? So back then, you're younger, you don't have as much, you don't have kids, you don't have house, you don't have business. You're now older. How do you manage not poo-pooing new ideas soon when you're like, that's going to, you know, like you'd already see that some trade show is not a thing, but you just never know. And when you're younger, you're just full blast into everything. Whereas now, again, I'm speaking for myself, it's like you don't dip your toe in, but you have reservations or you don't just, do you still action the same like you did when you were 20 now? Or do you, is there a way that you manage kind of the decision-making tree?
Yeah, definitely not. That's the power of experience. That's also a reason that so many companies will back second-time founders, right? If you were successful the first time around, you exited your business, you got another business, a VC or someone is much more likely to back you around too because you're that much smarter. And if you did it time first round, you're much more likely to do it again. Yeah, no, I would say we make decisions much more intelligently than we did, but you just don't know what you don't know. Going back, if I was to encourage somebody, you can always just go full out. Like I was a passionate person and I was all in on whatever I was doing. And I was just going to you make a decision and then you make it, you just figure it out. Yeah. That being said, if you could work for a company first, if you could work for someone and watch how the company runs or how the product runs or how to sign up customers, how to work on customer success, learn some of the metrics in the business, learn some of the playbooks in a business, right? Like how does operations work? How do you hire people? What happens when people get fired? Just observe, you get taken so much. Then I think that is even a quicker roadmap it just gives you, I think, much more confidence and much more, you're just going to make more of the right decisions. I remember we have a mutual friend, a guy named Lane. I remember him saying to me, I make 1,000 decisions a day. I'm just hoping 51% of them are right. And over time, maybe it's 55%. And as I keep going, it'll get 60%, 65% and so forth. And that's really the process. I remember I even used to I used to go through this framework where I would write down the biggest assumptions I had for a quarter. This is what I really think is going to happen. And then a quarter later or two quarters later, or sometimes I'd review it even a year or two later, you'd realize how wrong you were on some of them. And so I think that's an important process, but I was also right on others. But the secret ingredient I already alluded to a little bit, though, for everybody listening, is that at the same time, because it's your business and because you're doing it, you can actually make a decision and often make it right as well. And I wish I had done a little bit more of that early on too. Like trade shows work. I just needed to figure it out. In other words, I spent all this money and did it. What I really needed to do was figure out what went wrong, how to make it work better, and then maybe repeat the process, turning it completely off and then trying another channel or doing this or doing that. That's just as bad. Like you gotta, again, experience can help you with that, but often you just need to see something through and figure it out and you can make a decision right. Because trade shows do work. They absolutely work. But yeah. There's techniques, there's strategies that we know now that we didn't know then.
So now you've stepped into the online arena per se. You would you call it going to online trade shows? What's the sales thing now? And again, I got too far a question where Facebook changes things. You know, again, I think you should take 2 minutes to help listener understand what the main part of the business does now, who it benefits, and then at the same time, how you guys stick handle when things change. Because it's we're all faced with change all the time. And if you're not paying attention, you're gonna be influenced by change from the media and whoever else wants to like pour their shit on you. So to get through that, how do you manage those changes and keep your business going?
Yeah, so great question. So our product today, the StreetText, still the name from like the textbook sign writers, but it's all Facebook ads. And so we help businesses generate leads. It's mostly real estate agents, but we have actually a lot of other businesses that are signing up now as well. And so this kind of like secret sauce to our platform is that we aggregate an enormous amount of data. So when people are running ads through our platform, we then can show you which ads are working, what leads are costing in the different markets from those ads. And so you can literally just deploy an ad that's gonna work in seconds. And so that's gonna take you from zero to hero on Facebook really quick. You don't have to learn how Facebook Ads Manager works. Even if you did, most of our best clients come from running their own ads. They got sick of like dealing with all of the issues they ran into or the non-compliance or not really sure why Facebook Ad Manager is changing all the time or not really sure what to launch or what to do. And so our platform can help you get in front of the right audience and generate leads for your business really quick. And so we did that same thing for our business. In addition to that, we do a lot of remarketing and other things that can help improve the lead quality as well, getting a little bit more into the weeds. But all in all, one of the things that I love about, you can call it performance marketing or paid ads or Facebook and Instagram ads or however else you want to do it, or even Google ads. One of the things that I love about ads, and I think that is so underrated, is it's a tap. You can turn it on and off, right? Like you can launch a website and you can do your best to get SEO and you will eventually get more people to view eyeballs. You can post it on social and share it on your newsfeed and you'll get some people to come to your website. But with ads overnight, you can drive people to your offer. You can drive people to your product. You can drive people to your website. And if you have a system that can take someone, if you can figure out, well, how much it costs to get lead traffic to your website and ultimately where you can make money from that, monetize it, and you can figure out what that payback cycle is, it can become infinite. Like you can start to just increase that. And so it's a channel like any other channels. You can do outbound strategies, you can do cold calls, you can do emails, you can do trade shows, right? There's so many different ways to drum up business, but I think of performance marketing personally for me is one of the most exciting, one of the most powerful. And so we do the same thing for our clients that we do it to generate business for ourselves. So we run ads, obviously, on Facebook and Instagram. We drive those business owners or real estate agents to our platform. They then become a trial. They like the product. Then they buy the product. We use that money and reinvest it back in that process, right? And keep it going. And that's what we encourage all of our clients to do as well. The second part of your question is what happens when it changes? And two thoughts there. One is if you have a channel that's working, I would for sure double down on it. It's harder to get another channel working than it is to just get more and extract more value from the channel you have. That being said, we did have an enormous roadblock that happened with iOS 14 update. You remember all the days when Apple came along and basically was able to pull the rug out into Facebook. And if you weren't running ads, you have no idea how much of an upset that was, but it was a big deal. It was a big deal to Facebook. It was a big deal to advertisers. It affected us, it affected our clients. But it took us from being on a rocket ship. Like we had an incredibly fast payback period. We were able to really target who we wanted. And I would say our cost to acquire a customer at that time was just, it was like just over $100. It was incredibly inexpensive. And after that update, it went up to $1,500, almost $2,000. And sometimes it was just even, it just didn't even work at all. And so it was like a 10 to 20 time swing for us. It was a big deal. And so where I think what we did wrong in that is that we were so determined to get our channel back in the short term, and we didn't explore another channel. So I think our business suffered for a good year, actually, as a result of us not switching. Facebook has since come around. This is their revenue model. They have a lot of ways of adding a lot of other data to their platform. And it is basically, it's not quite as good, but it's basically as good as it was before. And there's ways you can work it. And so that's good. But that was years ago. What we should have done was explore other channels sooner. And now we have now we run at least two other channels. So if anything ever happens to Facebook again for us, we have other channels that we can lean on. So hopefully that answers your question when the market changes.
Yeah. What was it that Apple, what was it that they did?
Okay. So they did a couple things. So back in those days, and most people didn't realize this even, but your Apple device actually has a device code on it. People think of like when they tag you with like an IP address or they follow you around. Oh no, your actual phone ID, your computer ID, everything was being sent. Facebook knew exactly who you were, wherever you were, exactly the devices that you use. They didn't have to try to what's the word I'm looking for?
Triangulate
or synthesize your identity in any way. They knew who you were, wherever you were all the time. Like if we needed to show an ad, and they wanted to show an ad to a particular person, and they were also mining a ton of additional data on you as well. It was incredibly easy for them to find you, show you that ad, and get perfect attribution back to the advertiser too. So in other words, if you bought something, we knew that you bought it on this device, who you were, when it happened, and it would happen live time instantaneously. And then all that data Facebook would use it. They would get smarter on it. They would give all of that attribution back to the advertiser. So they would say, hey, so-and-so bought your product. You know, you made X amount of dollars. You could invest more predictably and more. Wow. As an ad buyer, you could make very lifetime decisions and you could really get your ROI up, right? Your return on ad spend up. Apple did two things. One is they gave people the ability, they fully opted out of the device thing. The device thing doesn't pass at all anymore. They allowed advertisers the button that says, would you like this app to track you? So from an Apple level, they opted out. And how many people click that button? Do you ever click, I want them to track me?
No.
You don't, right? Nobody does. And they knew that was going to happen. And so when they did that, they fully removed now that data from Facebook. Big punch in their face.
Right.
They have nothing. And even if you did allow them to track you, you said yes, Apple happily holds that information now for as, I think it's like a 72 to however long period of time that they so deem they will hold it for. And then when they, and at no frequency, they will, like when, in no timeline, like they won't tell Facebook when it is, they'll then send that information back. So Facebook went from perfect visibility. Yeah.
But that was 72 hours ago. I'm not there
72
anymore.
Hours ago.
Yeah.
And now when you get it, Facebook's, they did buy, but they didn't know that they bought. All the signals were gone. So they went from perfect visibility to absolutely blind. Completely. Yeah. It was a huge hit. Now, if you don't, the thing that people don't fully realize is, and there's some assumptions here. Take this as a grain of salt. This is Stephen Whiting's perspective. But Apple and Facebook, they play games, right? And Apple is a brand company, and it can play, it has a powerful hand to say, hey, we are protecting your privacy. But they do not care about your privacy. I will assure you, they do not.
I was going to ask about that.
But I'll tell you why they don't in just a second. But by saying and playing it, hey, we care about your privacy, consumers are like, yeah, Apple, right? And they can stick it to Facebook because Facebook's a big competitor to Apple in so many ways. Like even look at the Vision now. Oh, lo and behold, they've got their own little augmented reality headsets. Right. Whoever has the consumer is ultimately the winner. Apple's got hardware, but they don't have the consumer. The consumer's sitting on Facebook. They're sitting on Instagram. Right. They don't actually have the consumer. There's all these big games that they play all the time. But if they own the hardware, they can then control platforms like Facebook's ability to have access to the consumer, which they did do. Facebook, Apple has their own ads. I always find it funny that I never get to opt out of any of Apple's software and how they show ads or any of the little notices they want me to buy things or do this or that. They happily will use the privacy to their advantage. They're dealing with that big lawsuit in regards to their app store. They milk everything they can. They are happily running ads and making as much money as possible under the guise of being privacy first. But anyways, that's just my perspective. Take it for what you will. But heavy
blow. I always find that mastermind quite interesting. It's you became with that one issue to what is, Facebook just totally changed the algorithms. Wow. For any other business that gets a revenue, and if your revenue tap is just, the revenue tap doesn't work. It's like, you got to restart again. Like that just is, again, I think you have a pretty good network of people around you. Do you, I would say, coordinate getting together with certain people, or is it more like certain people that you know where the universe serves it up, you need to go see that particular person because that person has done something? Or is it more just organic in What I'm trying to get at is you do have mentors, you do have multiple mastermind helpers, in not in direct business, but more of just like idea. And ideas usually lead to getting objectives and goals done. So is there any sort of formula you have for continuing to move that forward, or is it more just organic in just the relationships that you have good ideas or get ideas to get things moving forward?
Well, that's a deep question, Dustin, because where do ideas come from?
Yeah. Are you asking the question or are you being...
I can take a stab at answering that, but there's a lot in there, I think.
I will too after.
Okay, sure. Your network is your net worth. And that's another little like adage or saying, but it's so true. And I wish I had worked on my network more, like a little bit more proactively earlier on. I do have a lot of mentors, like you mentioned, and a lot of things, but I do wish I had worked on it even more. And I'm putting an enormous amount of emphasis in it going forward as well. Like sometimes, and I think one of the dangers, even with COVID a little bit, is you can be so comfortable at home, reach out to people when you need them. But you just don't get some of those, as you described, universe encounters that whatnot. So I can share two stories, actually, that I think are really interesting on where you could say like the universe or God or whatever else helped to bring things about that are pretty powerful. And so this will be the other side of the spectrum. So I guess my first thing is, work on your network whenever you can. Always should. You always need the help. Things will come up all the time that will blindside you. But then sometimes you literally just got to pray to a higher power and hope for something to happen. So we had this one situation where we all of a sudden, for whatever reason, and this happened a number of years ago, it was 2017, going to 2018, our Facebook ads that were running for our clients were disappearing. And so we just couldn't understand it. Like our clients would be running ads and then all of a sudden say, hey, the ad is gone. And we would look for it and it's like the post was gone. It didn't even exist. We reached out to Facebook support. They couldn't help. We had Facebook individuals that we worked with at that time. They couldn't figure it out. We went down through circles and circles like nobody could help us, right? It got so bad that we started investing a fair bit of money we probably invested quite a bit of money actually in being able to detect when these posts were disappearing and then have a tool in the background that would rebuild it for the client. And so we were trying to rebuild their ads when they were disappearing because it was obviously clients were starting to cancel and they were getting upset. I got this ad, it's working great, and now it's gone. Now, the challenges with our solution is it isn't really a solution. Number one is even if we can rebuild the ad, we lost all the social engagement. It didn't stop the fact that the client's upset that they lost their ad. Right. And we knew really as a more like concerning issue that if this continued, like we don't have a business. Right. And Facebook wasn't solving it for us. So then you start reaching on and thinking like, is Facebook somehow doing this to us? Do they not want us here? And again, we did everything. I knocked in every branch. I spoke to everybody I could, every contact. This is one that was tapped out because nobody could get into the behind the scenes in Facebook. So we had a report that would show up every day and would show how many posts that we would lose. And sometimes you'd lose like 10 or 20, but other days you'd lose like 100 or even more. And like the sickness that I felt in my stomach in those days, like it was starting to get really bad. This is where health stuff can kick in. Like you got so much anxiety you're carrying, right? And your whole team's working, you're paying everybody, but overnight it could just be gone. You're like, what is happening? And so Facebook was hosting an F8 conference. It's like their in-person event where Mark Zuckerberg stands on the stage and he speaks and you got a whole bunch of different people there. And I told the team, I said, John and I are going to fly down to Facebook. And we're going to come back with an answer. Like, trust us. Like, we will have a solution when we come home. And prayed it out as well. Like, God save. Like, she got to do something. But there's a part of me that kind of wonders if God even cares about your business sometimes. Or there's all that other doubt creeps in and off you go. You fly off to Facebook. And we made our case known. Like, it was a really fun event. We got to meet a lot of people. And we got to meet, like, a different business leaders. And they'd have their badges on. And you'd go and talk to them. But we presented... I think it was like a 2 or 3 day event. I'm trying to remember exactly what it was, but we presented our case to everybody we could find and everybody said the same thing, right? No, sorry, don't know. I have no idea. I've never heard of it before. And we would then ask other people that were bigger in the company, like they had VP roles or whatever they seemed to be. And they were all badgeless, all those guys, but we'd find them somehow because somebody would try to point us there. Again, they couldn't help us, didn't really know what to do. So it was the last day we were there. I went to this booth again and I just really shared like our story and basically saying, this is a big deal. We can't solve this. We don't know what we're going to do. And I was describing the problem and he said, sorry, I really don't know how to help you. So John and I were just going to walk away again and we'll just walk somewhere. And this guy taps me on the shoulder And he just says, I overheard your conversation. Can you show that to me? But again, badgeless.
Yeah.
Just some guy. He just happened to be standing somewhere nearby. He wasn't with the booth. He was just off in the distance. And he didn't have a booth to take me to. I literally brought my laptop out and I sat on the ground with him, like in between these booths, just like up against the wall.
Yeah.
And I brought my computer and connected to the internet and I just started showing him. And he said, that's interesting. That's interesting. And he's looking at it. And then he says, you know, leave it with me. And you're like, I need more than that. I got a team I got to answer to. I'm going to go home tomorrow. Like, he's like, just, you know, leave it with me. And you're like, okay. And John and I, then you just go do the last part of the event or whatever. And I wake up in the morning and I got this email from him. And he's, hey, looked into it a bit, fixed it. And that was it. It's all he said. And I tried to find him because I wanted this guy after the fact. I wanted to find him, anything. I couldn't find nothing. He never responded to me again. I tried to ask him a couple questions like, hey, what did you find or whatever? Never found it. But anyways, long story short, that was years ago. He fixed it. He fixed it. Like I don't know, because he was still at the event the whole day. He must have woken up in the morning and had it on his list of to-do things, looked at it, and fixed it. And he fixed it immediately. Like he knew what he was looking for, what he was doing. In other words, we were very lucky. He was there. He didn't have a badge. But those are like those moments where something like that happens and you go, John, remember I told you earlier in the story how we came back on that airplane from the trade show, how we felt. We're coming back on the airplane on like cloud nine, right? Like the business is saved. Imagine the team is going to be so excited. Like John and I are just so inspired. And that's a complete opposite. And so I think sometimes those things do happen in your business too. And there's been mentors that have come into our life. If we have time, I could share you another one of those stories. But so yeah, I think sometimes it is organic, but I think you got to put your intention out there regardless.
Yeah.
You got a problem. And I would say one other thing I'm learning today is I'm typically pretty close-lipped, secretive, not secretive, in a, just like conservative. I don't necessarily want to put it all out there, but I'm realizing, man, I got to just ditch all that. That's not serving me or my customers or our team or anybody or my family. Like if you got a problem or you're something you're working on or you want advice, you got to ask.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm trying to do that a lot more now, just get it out there. So hopefully that answers that long.
100%. I think if you got time and you had a second story, we could get it in.
Okay. A second story is, so I just think it's just funny how this works sometimes. Dustin, have you ever done this thing where I would record myself? So I would record myself speaking out like a vision to like of what I wanted in the future. Yeah. And I would say all these things of what I wanted. And I would play it in the vehicle. So like I'd have it on my playlist so that every once in a while I could listen to it. And I would like listen to myself. And I was hoping back then, so I didn't fully understand how it all worked, but I was hoping that if you just listen to it, it's more likely to come true. It's get that subconscious mind kicking in and working. Yep. And I would listen to it. And I said some things. It's like how it ends. So I made this thing years ago, kind of the same sort of thing. And I remember I bought a traffic and conversion. They used to run these summits. And I bought this. John and I didn't attend, but I bought this, like their training. And one of the things that really stood out to us was this kind of like sales rocket ship thing. It was run by a guy named Dan Martell. I don't know. Have you met Dan?
Yeah, Captain.
So here is a guy that I just see on stage and he's kind of sharing a bunch of stuff and whatnot. Anyways, I just think it's interesting that years later, I wrote this thing out and I was basically, the story is like, I was asking for a guy just like Dan. I described all these things in this thing I was listening to myself. Dan ends up, because of COVID, he moves to Kelowna. He then becomes friends with some of my closest friends. We spent quite a bit of time together today. I just saw him again on last Friday when we were snow biking. And I just think, and I actually haven't played this for him. I actually been wanting to play it for him. I was on the snow bike trip list last year and I was driving home and I've been talking about a bunch of things and whatnot. And I'm driving home and somehow that clip just came on. It was playing in the background of the car. I hadn't listened to it in forever and it came on and I'm listening to it. And it's one of those like moments where you just go, oh my goodness, like everything that I had put out there and said is happening. But it was also embodied in this particular mentor that I was literally asking for that covered all these different things that could help guide us and teach us these different areas of the business that we needed. And he like moves to where I am. I just think those things are just so interesting sometimes. where you go out and seek mentors sometimes, and other times they do find you. They come and they become a part of your life. And I think that like your story, your life is much more connected to other people in a way. Like there's all these little interesting things that are stitched together in your life that are just so fascinating. And one of the things I really want to teach my kids too is like how you treat people really matters, because you don't know when that person will have an influence on your future life. But I have been amazed at how many people in my past have some impact in my future too. That makes sense.
100%.
And it's all, everything's connected in one way, shape, or form. But yeah, those are kind of my two stories.
Well, I think on that topic, there's a guest that I've had on the show. He was my mentor when I was early years of the business. Sandro Forte is his name. And he has been on the show, but I had him break it down, because when I would have been in my 20s, he called it mind changers. And what he did was he would say, you write basically, not just a goal, but it would be something like, it feels so good on my toes, the sand and the warm sun on my face while I'm sitting in Hawaii and my business is running profitably at home. And it was like, and then you just, that's a goal. Obviously, I want to go on vacation, could have been your goal, but actually putting yourself and having a sensory experience and feeling that and seeing it in past, in kind of present tense, you know, is similar to what you're talking about. I did jot that down of recording it, because that would be taking mind changers to the next sort of level. So thanks, Steve, for that. Any projects that you're most excited about, or current nuggets that you're most excited about, something you read, something, you know, a little snippet that you want to share that's been a big sort of active ingredient for you?
Well, I guess this one will go out last with the last thing I just shared, even with Dan. And so I would say what I'm most excited actually about today is content. And I would share it in this context. So our platform definitely makes it easy for people to run different ads and run remarketing. And there's a big content component to all of that when it's done well. But the lives and stories and the challenges that we've overcome, and both of us can share this, and a lot of your listeners, you really do need to share those with other people. And so I think what I'm most excited about is overcoming my fear of not wanting to share those things for so many different reasons, but now beginning to really realize and consider it's so much bigger than me. When you read a book, if somebody writes a book, you've read many books, Dustin, that have impacted your life. You've never met the author, especially those that have passed away a long time ago. Like I Think and Grow Rich or somebody. Like, how thankful are you that they wrote those books, that they shared? You know, how much of an impact has it made on your life and the lives of others because they shared? And I think that there's something for all of us. And I think it's so good that you'd even do this podcast and get this out. But we need to start sharing more, and we need to start reaching back and seeing who, and just being, I guess, just in other words, by sharing, you don't know who hangs in the balance. There might be somebody that hears what you say that moves them forward in their life that you'll never know. But, and that's that balance component, like the, what hangs in the balance of the decisions and the things that we do. And what I'm most excited about is leaning into that now more than I've ever done before, getting out of my comfort zone, getting out of my sort of concerns of what people might think or how dumb I might sound or if I'll embarrass myself, and just realizing that it is bigger than me. There are people that will see it, hear it, and it might mean the difference in what they're able to accomplish in their business and their lives, their family, and that like echo effect. So that's what I'm most excited about. And it ties into, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the fact that I did that recording and Dan somehow came into my life. So anyways, that would be my closing thought, I guess, on all of that.
Thanks a lot, Steve, for some very wise words, and always fun to connect. Next time it will be coffee or beers. Beers actually on Wednesday.
That's right.
See you on Wednesday. Thanks.